Cub times.
Okay, so first of all, just a housekeeping item that next week I will not be here. So next week I have one of my YU trips. I'll be in New York next week. But we'll resume Yetz Hashem 2 weeks from today. So I promised that today we would cover defamation cases in Beis Din. This is one of the questions that we get from time to time. Somebody brings a suit that people have been speaking badly about them. We had a case once where there was a big fight between a rabbi of a shul and one of the balabatim of the shul because the rabbi gave a sermon in which he blasted this particular person, apparently. I don't know if he mentioned him explicitly by name. I think maybe not, but everyone sort of knew who he was talking about, that this person made a wedding and he didn't invite the rabbi and he had somebody else be Masada Kiddushin, and the rabbi said that this is a hideous thing to do, that if you're part of a congregation, you have to always invite the rabbi, and he should be the Masada Kiddushin, and taking away from his parnasa, I guess that they also got paid money for being Masada Kiddushin. I know I've been Masada Kiddushin. I don't usually like charge a fee or get paid per se, but this ended up being a big fight, and then the other person said no, he thought that he had permission from the rabbi to enlist somebody else to be the Masada Kiddushin, and the whole thing was a big misunderstanding, and how could the rabbi speak so vituperatively against him, and the rabbi should be removed from his position, and half of the shul took the position of the rabbi, and half the position took the position of the balabas. And I think in the shul's bylaws it said that if there's ever a dispute relating to the shul, then it will go to like the OU Beis Din or something. But the OU didn't have a Beis Din, so they went to like the OU. The OU said, well, the Beis Din that we hold by is the, or that we are, you know, affiliated with, that we sponsor, is the Beis Din of America. So it ended up coming to the Beis Din of America. And we had to kind of, you know, consider, is this the sort of case that falls within our usual, you know, jurisdictional ambit that do we deal with defamation cases? The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Aleph talks about those types of cases that Beis Din adjudicates nowadays. So we've discussed this in the past. If it falls into the category of Shlichu Sayo, the cases that Beis Din adjudicates are cases that are Shchiyach, they're common, and Yesh Bo Chisson and Kis, and there's usually a monetary loss associated with them. There's no monetary loss associated with this sort of thing. And it wasn't clear that it was a case where there was monetary damages to be awarded altogether. Is it really something that would fit within the Beis Din's jurisdiction that would be, you know, something for us to handle? And then you have other types of cases where people bring suits for slander. They were vilified in other ways, where people spoke against them, that they committed some terrible personal crime that would sully their reputation, that maybe there was, we're going to speak next time about child molestation cases. Let's say somebody was accused of child molestation, but it turned out they weren't really a child molester. That's a really great way to destroy a person's, you know, reputation and their life and their family and pretty much everything. So when does it reach the level that it's appropriate for Beis Din to handle? This is something that we have to really give a lot of thought to, because if we would handle all kinds of cases, whenever one person is accused of speaking Lashon Hara against somebody else, so that could really fill our dockets for a long time, because, you know, unfortunately you have a lot of these types of disputes and these types of tensions that sometimes swirl around the community, and the Beis Din has to figure out, you know, what is its jurisdiction, and number two, what are the appropriate remedies in these types of cases. So first of all, defamation, we speak about it like from a secular court perspective, there are defamation suits. I was sued for defamation when the Beis Din of America issued a seiruv once, an order of recalcitrance against the husband who was refusing to give a get. So he sued me for, you know, millions of dollars, and sued the Beis Din, sued myself. And one of the causes of action was defamation, that we harmed his name. But in secular law, a defamation suit has to be something which is a false statement. It's a false statement which is presented as a fact that causes injury or damage damage to the character of the person the statement is about. That's what a defamation suit is. The truth is an absolute defense with respect to a defamation suit in a secular court. Here, the allegation was that we issued a seiruv and the person really was cooperative on some level with Beis Din, if not our Beis Din, some other Beis Din, so that the seiruv was not really appropriate. And the court threw out that suit. I mean, I didn't have to pay $4 million or anything for that matter, but the court threw out that suit in part because of the determination as to whether a person is recalcitrant, whether they are in defiance of their obligation to subscribe to Beis Din, is an ecclesiastical determination for the religious court to make, and a court is not going to interfere with the ecclesiastical determinations of the religious court. And there's a case law and precedent to back that up. So, you know, that wasn't, you know, so bad. I think I mentioned in the past I was also accused of threatening to break the fellow's, you know, kneecaps or whatever. So that was considered to be, you know, something that was a little harder to get around. But it wasn't. But that was certainly not true. I was looking forward to hearing the proof or whatever. They claimed they had phone recordings, and I really wanted to hear them. But, you know, it didn't get that far, so the case was dropped, and that was that. So in secular court, you have libel and you have slander. It's important to understand the difference between the two of them. Libel is a defamatory statement that is written, and slander is a defamatory statement that is oral. But they both under the general category of defamation. And defamation is just a defamatory, negative, detrimental statement against somebody that could harm their reputation. The famous case in the Supreme Court is that the New York Times versus Sullivan case from 1964, where there was some ad that was published by the New York Times that appeared to cast aspersions upon some commissioner of something relating to Martin Luther King. This commissioner, who is a public figure, said that he had been slandered and brought a defamation case libel, because it was a defamatory statement that was written, so it was a libel suit. And the Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, how often does that happen these days? It was a unanimous decision. They came to the conclusion that a newspaper or, you know, any media cannot be held liable for libel unless there was an intention to an intention to issue a false statement, or at least that the false statement was issued with reckless disregard for the truth, a standard which is referred to as actual malice. But if it wasn't, you know, with the reckless disregard of the truth, then you couldn't bring, even if it turned out that it was a false statement, that you couldn't bring an action for libel. So that's still true to this day, and what it does represent is that there is a very lenient standard when it comes to statements that are made against public officials, people who are public figures, since there is a benefit presumably to the democratic process, to what's good for society, for people to be able to speak freely about problems that they perceive to be occurring in the public sphere with respect to elected officials and public figures and things of that sort. So you don't want to muzzle people. You don't want to muzzle newspapers or journalists cramp their style in any way to have a chilling effect on their ability to criticize and to analyze and to pontificate about, you know, how this the country could be a better place, how the public officials could do their jobs better. So therefore, there would have to be actual malice, there would have to be a reckless disregard for truth in order to be held liable for a defamatory statement. So what does halacha have to say about all these different types of cases? Well, we know that there is a major prohibition of lashon hara. That goes without saying. That's a pasuk mitolo selik rachel b'amecha, that you're not allowed to go and be a talebearer. The Chafetz Chaim says that this is true both if you're mesapela b'fiv mamish, if it's going to be a lashon hara that's going to be expressed with your mouth, or even if it's a kos davar zeh oshu kosei b'lav davar zeh b'mechtavo. This is in klal aleph oschess of the Chafetz Chaim of lashon hara, or even if it's in writing, and this relates to what we were speaking about a couple of times ago, when we spoke about the Beis Din that issues a majority decision that it's not allowed to write down the name of the dissenting dayan and the names of the majority dayanim, because then that ends up being sort of an act of a bechilus, said that you're sort of tail bearing to the parties, you know, who ruled in their favor and who ruled against them, despite the fact that that's only in writing. It's not something which is being spoken out with one's mouth. So the Chafetz Chaim proves from there that this is a violation of a lashon hara even in the event that it's only in writing, even if it's what we would call libel as opposed to slander, it's still going to be lashon hara. Now, the Chofetz Chaim also makes the point that the more people are the recipients of the negative information, the greater the avera is going to be, right? So, if it's something which is broadcast to only one person, so that's already an avera of lashon hara, but it's broadcast to like 100,000 people, we know we have the halacha milsa de misamra ba'api beit lasa, that sometimes leisbei rishum lishon abisha, if you say in front of three people, but that means if it's not really, according to many meforshim of the Gemara there, it means if it's not really so clearly defamatory, you can interpret it either way, that maybe it's not a defamatory statement, maybe it is. So if you have three people, so probably the person meant it in the best possible way, not the worst possible way. But if it's clearly a defamatory statement, clearly, or a negative, you know, derogatory statement, in halacha, lashon hara, as the Rambam says, is in source Dalet, it could be emes, afa bisha omer emes. Lashon hara is, even if it's true, it's still a violation of lashon hara. If you convey derogatory information about somebody, so it's a much bigger avera, says the Chofetz Chaim, in klal beis halacha aleph of his sefer, if you have more and more people to whom the lashon hara is spread. So certainly nowadays, this is a major, major issue with respect to social media, with respect to the internet. Whenever you post negative information about somebody, and then millions of people, you know, suddenly, you know, are privy to it, so then the avera of lashon hara, to the extent that we're talking about a real avera over here, so it becomes magnified exponentially to a tremendous degree. Like, for example, you know, Rav Reuven found this picture, you know, that was taken while I was sampling some, you know, water to see if it would say Dove Pogame, because they put some detergent into it, and the picture made it on the internet, and it's all over. Suddenly it goes what they call viral. So it wasn't lashon hara, it was a, you know, perfectly fine thing showing the CRC in action. But it goes to show you how quickly things, you know, spread over the internet. It's a very, very scary thing. But in addition to lashon hara, which is when you say truthful derogatory information, which we hold is an avera, it's not, truth is not an absolute defense as far as the avera is concerned. But there's also what we call motzi shemos. That's what the Rambam talks about in Perek Zayin Halacha Beis and Hilchos Deos. He says that this is a haomer sheker nikra motzi shema chaveru. It's called defamation. In the secular world, it's called motzi shema. When you are issuing a derogatory statement that defames an individual, it brings a shame and degradation to that individual. So that's called motzi shema. And the Rambam goes on in the next halacha gimel. He says that there are three really terrible averos. It's avodas kochavim, gilo yirayas, and shrikos damim. And guess what? Lashon hara keneged kulam. Lashon hara is as bad as all of them together. That's how bad lashon hara is. And somebody who speaks lashon hara is kofir be. It's like it's ki'ilu kofir be'ikar, and it kills three people: the person who says it, the person who believes it, and the person about whom it is said. So we know it's a very, very bad thing. But granted, it's a very, very bad thing. Can you collect damages for it? Can you collect damages for defamation? So the damages that you would collect for defamation would really be in the category of having been embarrassed. Can you collect damages for boshes for the fact that somebody has embarrassed you? So this is a discussion in the Gemara, and it's based on a pasuk in Devarim, Parshas Ki Teitze, that talks about if there are two men who are fighting and one of the women wants to rescue her husband from the fight and she embarrasses another individual. She embarrasses the person who's striking her husband, who is engaged in a fight with her husband. How does he embarrass that person? She grabs his, grabs him by his private parts. And that's very embarrassing. And we say, v'katsusas, kapas, we chop off her hand. We don't really chop off her hand. You look at Rashi says, no. Mamon demein bosh, though, that we require a payment of the boshes, a payment of the embarrassment that was called, hakolafim evayesh v'hamisbayesh, according to the standing of the person who caused the bushan, according to the standing of the person who was embarrassed. That the person who was embarrassed is a person of higher prestige. The embarrassment, the boshes, and the payment is going to be greater. If the person who caused the embarrassment is a person of lower station, so then the embarrassment is going to be greater. It's more of an embarrassment if you're embarrassed by a person of lower station than a person of higher station. There's one version of this that says, well, persons of really low station, who's going to really care? You know, you have like some drunk who's running around embarrassing people, like nobody's going to necessarily take much stock of what he's saying. If it's a very prestigious person, so they have a right to embarrass, you know, they have a right to speak their mind. So maybe it means if a person's more like in an intermediate category, like a Beinoni, that the biggest embarrassment is maybe if a Beinoni causes you embarrassment. But however you understand it, HaKolafim Evayisham Yisbayish is going to depend upon the station of the person who does the embarrassing and the person who is embarrassed in terms of how much money is going to have to be paid. So how does this translate? How does this translate into actual payments? So the Gemara in Baba Kama on Daf Tzadi Amin Aleph speaks about the Mishnah, so that if Rokok Vigiba Roko, you spit on somebody and the spit goes into the person's face, so no sin lo abba meo zuz. So you have to pay 400 zuz, you have to pay a certain amount of money. There's a punishment that we're going to heap upon a person who imposes embarrassment upon another individual. However, the Gemara says this does not apply to every single case of embarrassment. Amar Papa, this is the Gemara Daf Tzadi Alef and Aleph Sura Zayin. Amar Papa lo shana lo bol bebigdolo. That's only if you spit on the person's face, but if you would spit on the person's clothing and it wouldn't go into the person's body, so you have not messed with the person's physical integrity, so then you don't have to pay anything. But why? You embarrass the person in terms of your words, right? You know, so what do we say? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Apparently, when it comes to monetary payment, we do say that. That if you only have words that you or you know you spit on a person's clothing, or it's simply something which does not touch the person's body, so it's just the either words or clothing that is affected, but not the person's physical integrity. So then, once the physical person has not been touched, there is, even if you've embarrassed the person, you're not obligated to pay any money whatsoever, which is sort of interesting, because we know that we have a parasha in the Torah, Mosi Shema. We want to talk about like this avera of Mosi Shema, of giving somebody a bad name, of the man who betroths a woman, and then when he comes time for him to take her into his home and to marry her, to do nisuin, he says, hey, you were not pure, you didn't behave yourself. You cheated on me between the betrothal and the wedding, and then it turns out that he was telling a lie, that it wasn't true, so he has to pay her 100 kesef, he has to pay her 100 shkolim. In fact, the Gemara in Erechin says, oh, so nimsa omen b'fiv chomer mina osa maisa. We see that a person who says bad things about, you know, his wife, about a woman, he has to pay more money than a person who physically assaults a woman, because if he would rape a woman, he pays 50 shekel, and if he slanders his wife, he has to pay 100 shekel. So we see that it's even worse. So why don't we learn from Motzi Shema? So Pashto says we don't derive from the case of Motzi Shema, because that's a very special case where the woman was actually, because of the husband's actions, she was actually sentenced to death. That according to the way that the Rambam understands the parashah in the Torah, in Hilchos Nara Marasa, the husband actually had hired false witnesses to testify against his wife that she had cheated while she was under him, and then she gets sentenced to death, and only afterwards, when she's about to be dragged away and, you know, and killed with a penalty of capital punishment, the Edim HaMizimim, the witnesses come along who are able to demonstrate and testify that the original witnesses were false witnesses, and only then she gets off the hook, and then that's when we penalize the husband, and he has to pay the 100, the mea kesef. So it's a very unusual, sort of out-of-the-box type of case that we don't derive from with respect to other cases of embarrassment. As a general rule, say, b'ai shibidorim patur mikum, that you don't have to pay anything. So how does that translate into, you know, l'maisa? So it's very interesting, because getting back to Shulchan Aruch, Shemishpat, Siman Aleph, so how do we adjudicate boshes cases nowadays? So there are really two different types of boshes cases. There's the classical case, for which you really would be chayev, according to the Din of the Gemara, right? The case where you spit on a person's body, where you hit a person, you assaulted a person, and we know that among the different damages a person can collect for physical assault, for compromising their physical integrity, is that they can also collect the embarrassment damages, the boshes damages, they can collect that. But the Shulchan Aruch says nowadays we don't collect it because there was no monetary loss that a person had, so we don't adjudicate cases where there was no actual monetary loss. So we say that if the person who was embarrassed like grabs the money they would have been entitled to, so ein mosiyim miyado, then they're allowed to keep the money. Or maybe we would issue a nidoy, we would issue some sort of a general cheirim, and we would say that the person who struck this other individual, Reuven struck Shimon, that Reuven is not going to be removed from cheirim until he appeases Shimon and gives to Shimon a certain payment of money for the embarrassment that he caused. But we can actually say, oh, according to Torah law, you'd be obligated to pay $400, or you'd be obligated to pay this amount of 400 zuz, so we're going to obligate you to pay 400 zuz. We're not allowed to do that because it doesn't fall within the category of shlichusayo, but we can put a person in nidoy. We can say, okay, we're going to put Reuven in cheirim until he appeases Shimon, you know, to whatever degree that we feel is appropriate for Shimon to be appeased when he receives that amount. But there is a separate second category of boshes, and that is when, according to the din of the Gemara, Shimon wouldn't be entitled to anything even before, you know, when we had our original Bate Din that was smuchim for Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is when there has been no attack upon Shimon's physical integrity. It's just that Reuven insulted Shimon. Reuven, you know, spat on the ground. He didn't spit on Shimon. He spat on the ground and called him a loser. He called him a mamzer. He called him a rasha. He called him whatever he called him. He called him a miser. He called him, you know, a shlemiel. You pick your insult. But there wouldn't be a penalty, according to Torah law, for Reuven to have to pay anything for the embarrassment that he has imposed upon Shimon. So the Rosh says that we don't want people to get away scot-free when they embarrass each other. So he says, so there's a couple of comments that the Rosh makes. He says, why is it that we exempt a person from having to pay boshes in the first place? If you look at source Yud, it says, for nearly second line, towards the end of the line, for nearly time, he says, the reason I believe that there is no penalty that one has to pay for boshes to arm, because the Torah says that what is the case where boshes has to be paid? That's when a woman grabs this fellow who's in a fight with her husband on his private parts. The mashal l'chayv b'toyve la boshes gufo, because the actual pasuk that imposes boshes is talking about when there has been an assault on the person's physical body. Of a boshes drama, raka kvigdo pater, but the Torah doesn't impose a boshes payment when a person simply insults another individual with words alone. But then he quotes Rosh Shriragot. Says Rosh Shriragzal kosov, the abba boshes drama minadimoso, that we have a takanas ha-ga'onim. We have a takanas ha-ga'onim for Rosh Shriragot to say, we don't want people to get scot-free because we think it's really a bad thing to insult people and to cast aspersions on their good name. So even on boshes dvarim, we per person nidoy actually fasen karoy until the person will appease the individual whom they have insulted, the fikavodo, according to their honor. And then he goes on and he says, and this is really, you know, sort of along the lines of the Gemara in Erechin, Mistabe the Yosef Boshes Dvarim Moshes Shechavala. The Boshes Dvarim is considered a worse offense on some level than actually hurting a person physically. Because there is nothing worse. We already read this in the Rambam. It's like Kofer Be'ikar. It's Keneged Kulam, like the three cardinal sins. When a person speaks Lashon Hara, there's nothing worse than Lashon Hara. He says that it's not just true that words will never hurt me. Words can be very, very hurtful. So it's true, according to the Ikar Halacha, you can't exact monetary punishment for this. But nonetheless, we're going to make this takanas gone. They're going to put somebody in cheirim until the money is paid. And the Yerushalmi, I just quoted the Yerushalmi here without giving it an extra number, but the Yerushalmi talks about that there was a takana that was made with respect to embarrassing a Talmud Chacham in particular. He gets paid even nowadays. That there was a litra d'dahava. They require the payment of a golden talent whenever a Talmud Chacham is insulted. So the Rosh has this quote from Rosh Shriragon, but the takana of Rosh Shriragon only would seem to make sense when we put people in nidoy. I mean, there's a famous comment by the Drisha in Evanez in Yoredeya Simen Chin Lamedalit, where the Drisha says we don't put people in nidoy nowadays. It's like, you know, they tried to put Spinoza in cheirim, right, for writing, you know, his philosophical treatise, and And he basically laughed it off, and they realized that nobody really takes, you know, excommunications of the rabbis so seriously anymore. So we don't really excommunicate people nowadays. So some of the poskim say, well, if the whole takana was we're going to excommunicate the person until they pay something, if the payment is based on removing an excommunication, we're not going to excommunicate people. So this takana is not going to go too far. It's not going to go too far because we're not going to put people in nidoy in the first place. When we issue a seiruv against somebody, that's not putting somebody in nidoy. It's just saying this person happens to be recalcitrant. It's not the same thing as placing an excommunication upon him. So there's a second rush. So that's the rush. The first rush we quoted was in Baba Kama in Perek HaChovel Siman Tesvav. The second rush is in the Shailos HaTshuvos of the rush. It's in the response of the rush. Klal Kuf Aleph Siman Tes. Okay? What does he say over there? He says, Ma'adin L'Vayish Chaveri Barabim. What do we do if a person embarrasses, they post something on Facebook, they post something on Twitter, they post something on Instagram, help me out, whatever else. They post something, you know, in social media, and they just cause this person to be absolutely humiliated. So he said, well, there are different, you know, types of payments that you have to make when you assault somebody, when you hurt somebody in different ways. However, he says, all of those different payments are ayudei maisehem. That's only if you physically assault the person. The Chazal say, "Bai shibadvarim pater." If you're only going to embarrass a person with words, you don't pay money. Amnam. Nonetheless, however, okay, that's what amnam means, okay. Nowadays, the word amnam means something, it technically also means, you know, in truth, but it was always, traditionally, for hundreds of years, people used amnam to mean however. Now, like, you know, it's more in vogue to say ulam, this for however, and amnam for in truth, but okay, it means both. Amnam nagu b'chol mokom mekomos moshevos Yisrael. But the minag is, nonetheless, in all of the regions where Jews live, then we make a takana. Lasos takana usiyag l'dover. That the Chachamim, the Bati Din, have the right to make takanos. So he said that if there is a very strong, compelling need, you can make a takana to, you know, further the purposes of the Torah. We don't want to speak with people to speak Lashon Hara Motzi Shema. To place, you know, some type of a muzzle in people's mouths so that they won't speak Lashon Hara. And therefore we can impose penalty payments upon a person who commits slander, a person who commits libel. He says that every single bezdin has the right to do this. So the rush adds another possibility. He says that a bezdin has the ability sometimes to penalize beyond that which the letter of the law would otherwise allow them to do. That's what we have in Siman Beis of Poshim Mishpah, right? Makim Ma'onshin Shalom Min Adin. So therefore they can make a takana to impose a payment despite the fact that Mi'ikar Adin, no payment would really be required. So if you look at the Rabbim's formulation of what we do in the slander type of cases, the Rambam Hilchos Kovel Masik Perigimah Halacha Hey seems to build upon the second idea of the rush, that you don't necessarily need it to be in place of removing an excommunication, a nidoy, but it can simply be a takano whenever the Chazal feel that there is a compelling need to stop people from slandering each other. He starts off with the Yikar Adin. Yes, Potter, you embarrass somebody, so you don't have to necessarily pay anything. However, but Bezdin can build fences in order to make a takana, as they see fit. And then he brings the special halacha, which he codifies from the Yerusha. If a person embarrasses the Tamachachachachachachachach, then they certainly have to pay the full amount. And then he calculates exactly, you know, how that one golden tablet would end up being translated into his modern day currency. He says, "Gobim menu mishko chamisho shloshim dinar min azav shul mishko tisha sloim pakos rebia." And he figures out, he calculates exactly what it is in order to show that we really do impose this amount in certain cases. And the Ramah in Yoredei and Siman Reish Mem Gimel says we don't have nowadays people who are on that level of being a Talmud. We don't have Talmidei Chacham in Bizman Hazeh. Like, how can we define exactly who's the Talmud? Everyone's called Rabbi, right? We don't know exactly who qualifies as the Talmud Chacham for purposes of imposing this payment. But the Shach, interestingly, in Siman Av Chosha Mishpat says, you bet you we have Talmidei Chacham in Bizman Hazeh. And not only do we have Talmidei Chacham in Bizman Hazeh, and this is a very interesting statement. If you think about the New York Times versus Sullivan case, he says, Harashim Emunim HaKahal K'Talmidei Chacham in Bizman Hazeh. Says the people are appointed as the heads of the community. the people who are appointed as a sort of the leaders of the community have the same din as Talmud Chacham. Because for purposes of this din, what does Talmud Chacham mean? It means a leader of the community. You're going to get up and you're going to insult gratuitously without good reason a leader of the community, so then we're not going to tolerate that. It's true, sometimes you can get up with toelis. You can say somebody is a rasha and you have to stop them from doing their evil deeds. You have like a child molester that you have to stop. So then it's not lashon hara to speak badly against that person because you have to stop them from molesting children, obviously. But when it's not the toelis and it's just pure lashon hara, that you're speaking against somebody because you're out to get the person and so forth, it's not warranted to speak badly about the person. You're going to defame a person's reputation. You're going to ruin their livelihood and so forth. So under these circumstances, you do have the right to impose a, the bezin has the right to impose penalties, and particularly the Rambam seems to indicate, and the Shach seems to affirm this, if you're dealing with somebody who's in a position of leadership in the community, not that the standard is more lenient, the standard for purposes of when we're going to actually impose damages, the standard according to the Shach is actually more harsh. The standard is actually more harsh if you're going to insult the person who represents the community, who's actually a religious leader of the community. The standard is going to be harder. It's going to be harsher. And the Mordechai has a case that's interesting where Reuven said to the husband of Leah, the husband of Shimon, who happened to be Leah. So he said to Reuven, Reuven says to Shimon, why in the world do you remain married with this woman who's a nafkas bara? You know what a nafkas bara is? Nafkas bara means, you know, she's a woman of ill repute. She goes out at night. She's a nafkas bara. Why do you stay with that woman who's a nafkas bara? And he said this, like, in a way which, you know, people heard and so forth, and it just caused tremendous embarrassment to Shimon and to his wife and so forth. So the Mordechai said it wasn't warranted. So the Mordechai said that Hayroi Lakanso Bemakoso Bemomon. He says that the Fira Oseinei HaKahal, it's appropriate under those circumstances, Bezin Shmeka Tzakana, that we can't allow a person to be so humiliated and so ridiculed and so diminished within their community to speak this way about a person's wife, that it's appropriate to either give Malkus, or it's appropriate to impose a monetary fine under these circumstances.
Even if it's true.
Lashon Hara could be even if it's true, unless it's a positive purpose. Like if in this case, like if he was trying to get Shimon to separate, if he felt Shimon needed to divorce his wife because she was a surah to him because she committed adultery, might be a different story. So he's presumably talking against, well, there was no positive purpose. Presumably it wasn't true altogether, or certainly did not have enough of a foundation to be stated. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Kovah B'Chaver, Siman Tav Chav, Sif Lam and Ches, quotes this halacha. He says, "Baishu b'dvar mispater v'yesh lebezdin." Again, quoting sort of this takana that was mentioned by the Rosh, "V'yesh lebezdin b'chol makom b'chol zman litor gepi mashiru." It's up to Bezdin to make these types of takanas. V'yesh omim. Then he quotes sort of the Rav Shvira Gaon approach. "Yesh omim." That we put to the person who committed the slander in Cherem until he appeases the person whom he slandered. Then the Rama adds that we give Malkus, Malkus Mardus, which obviously we don't do nowadays. And then he adds, that it's just to be clear, when we speak about Baisho Bidvarim, we're not just talking about spitting on the ground, we're talking about slander. When you are slandering a person's good name, Havi Bechlal and Mevayish Bedvarim. That's included within Mevayish Bedvarim. The Sma says over there, it's like you're sticking a dagger in the person's heart, because Yesh Boshis Kamat Keros Kerev. And there's no worse boshis than when you actually slander a person's good name. Says that is the ultimate in terms of boshis. So now we have, this is our cause of action. But what do? We're a bezdin. So do we impose monetary damages or not? According to the Ikar Din, there is no monetary damages that would be enclosed as a general rule. There would only be two justifications for doing it. Either because we can put the person who committed the slander or the libel in a cherem until they appease the other party, but we don't put people in the cherem nowadays, so that's sort of a limited remedy. Or we say that the batei din of every single generation can make a takana in this regard. They can make a takana to say that we are going to establish monetary damages in specific types of cases where there has been a defamation. And then it becomes sort of a judgment call from the perspective of the Beis Din. Does the Beis Din have the right to make that sort of a judgment call? So you look in the Chavos Yar, let's look at what did the later authorities do. If we're going to look in a past Shulchan Aruch at what the later authorities did. So look in Source Tesvav, you have the Chavos Yar. The Chavos Yar, you know, had some sort of a major dispute. People are calling each other's names. Looked very similar to kind of like the Shul dispute that came into the bailiwick of the Beis Din of America a number of years ago. They're calling each other names. He says, come on, do I have time for this? But he said that, you know, since he wants to help out, he said, towards the end of the third line, I went through all the tainos that this one wrote this really long, nasty email about this one, whatever the equivalent of an email was in those days, and this one wrote a really long, nasty email about the other one, until I knew all the different claims, the different attacks that they had towards each other, until I knew it as well as Psuke de Zimra. Okay, that's like a good expression. So he said, like, you know, I could just rattle it off without even like thinking of whatever. I could just rattle it off like Psuke de Zimra, like Psuke de Zimra at the Kin 6:25 a.m. minion. Seriously, no. So it was just, you know, it was just like chick chack. Right, obviously. So he said, so what am I going to do? But he said, I wanted to, Amati Echkoma, Ladas Pesha Dara Ben Estadmi, Rechokim Echel Yosem, Keshadibati Tami Mama Yossi Eslam. And I really just wanted to, like, work things out between them. And he comes to the end and he says that there are sort of different general rules. He said, first of all, the person who started the fight is much worse than the person who gave back as good as they, you know, as good as they got. Because once you've already been insulted, there's more of a justification, not justification, but there's more of a sort of an excuse not to penalize somebody for just, you know, talking back and trying to protect themselves. But he says that if you really do find that, if I would find that there was real defamation that was committed certainly by the person who started it, I would say that I would have to give Malkus in the Beis Knesset, Lufnei Behurachum. You know, once we have, you know, the davening model, so after Pesukei Dezimra, Yashmon Esrei, the Yep Behurachum, right? So he said, I would give Malkus before Behurachum, or, I don't know, maybe then people wouldn't mind talking so much. Then, or, he said, they can redeem it with Lamentes Sehubim, right? Or he says it could be redeemed. So here's another idea that the Chavos Yar throws out. When they used to have the jurisdiction, when the Jewish communities had the autonomy that the Bati Din could impose malchus upon somebody, where they would actually be able to give out to give lashes to people, so then you could say you can require the payment of a certain amount of money to redeem yourself from the lashes. Instead of receiving lashes, you'll pay a certain amount of money. But we don't give malchus, so we don't really have that option. But then he does say, in the end, another very interesting idea. He says, "Mechila b'tzibur l'chaveru." Lefi Torah, in yonah mechila b'tzibur l'chaveru. What's mechila b'tzibur l'chaveru? So he introduces the concept, and the Chavos Yar says this elsewhere as well. This is Siman Samach. Yes, this is Siman Samach Beis. Sometimes you can simply not impose a monetary payment because Medina de Gemara, there's no monetary payment that gets imposed, but you could just require the parties to apologize to each other. That's also been, sometimes that's also a good way of making the problem go away. In our case of the rabbi in this balabas, in this congregation, which was splitting into two and so forth, what we said after we listened to the different tainus was, okay, the rabbi shouldn't have spoken, you know, so angrily in public against this person, but the person also should not have exacerbated, you know, the matter by, you know, trying to get the rabbi fired. So we just said each one kind of like, you know, would write a letter saying now that they've heard where the other party was coming from, they understand, you know, what they did, and they really apologize to the extent that they had contributed to it, and they ask for, you know, forgiveness from the other party, and they grant forgiveness to the other party, and those two letters that would be written by the rabbi and the balabas would be posted on the bulletin board of the shul for a period of about a month and a half or so, and afterwards shalom ha'yisrael. And that's what we did, and the parties wrote their various letters, and we were able to be mashkidus mariva. We were able to make peace in this particular fashion. So that is, you know, another possibility of what you're able to do. But there's another interesting case that came to the Beis Din where the person the parties, you know, did not have a case that was quite this severe. It was more just sort of like a general defamation that somebody is, you know, saying, I think this person is saying not nice things about my family, that they feel that we treated them, you know, harshly and badly, and, you know, they're, you know, saying bad things about us in Kiddush. But it wasn't necessarily dividing the community apart or anything of that sort. It was just sort of like a general sort of tiff that these two different, you know, families had towards each other. And the question was this appropriate for Bezdin jurisdiction? Here, they hadn't signed the Shtar Beruin that all disputes in the community are going to, you know, go to the Bezdin. So if you look at the Maharshal in Source Chav Gimel, I'm going to jump a little bit for a moment.
Just a question.
Yes, go ahead.
We don't impose the monetary, but in this, the way to avoid the Malkus to pay a certain amount of money.
Yes.
So poor people don't have that remedy.
Remedy, but let's say that it's a poor person who would otherwise be liable for Malkus, so you could say, you'll, instead of receiving the Malkus, you'll have to pay this amount of money. Maybe it'll go a little easier on you because you're poor, and maybe you'll pay it over a longer period of time. There'll be a little payment plan, but it doesn't necessarily have to be paid, you know, right away, you know, on the spot, on the first day. So Yamshel Shlomo in Source Chav Gimel, this is in Baba Kama Perches, Perkachov Simon Mem Aleph. So he says that he's talking also about a case where there was just biyush dvarim and hotzah shema. I mean, obviously serious things, but not enough. Where he says ke'im bo dvarim de mamona, but it's a case where there would not have been monetary damages. So he says that the best thing is to figure out a way to make the controversy and the quarrel go away. And if you look at the end of the fourth line, it says im yakol atzibul ashki the darash reim. If the tzibur of the community can make the dispute go away, then they are fortunate. What does he mean by that? He means that some of these cases don't necessarily have to be handled by Bezdin. We, as I said, Bezdin has to figure out what's its jurisdiction. You know, there are rabbanim of shuls. And sometimes you have to divide the territory of responsibility. What are cases that go to Bezdin and what are cases that are within the rav's responsibility? So you have two families that aren't getting along, that are maybe like not speaking nicely about each other. So in many cases, that's an appropriate sort of matter for the rav of the community to resolve. Now, in this particular case, the rav of the community was himself embroiled in machlokis, and that the case, you know, was said by the community to the Bezdin, so we handled the case. But where this sort of case, where there aren't really monetary damages to award and the like, and it's just a question of maybe finding mechila and hisnatzlus, where the parties are just going to write letters of apology towards each other and forgiveness and so forth, that's something where ideally, if the leaders of the community, the rav of the shul, is able to handle, so that would be sort of the ideal way to be able to deal with this type of a controversy. But are there ever situations where it is appropriate for Bezdin to impose monetary damages? We just read that the Rosh says, and the Rambam paskins this way, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, that there are certain times that we say that it is appropriate for Bezdin to make a takana, for monetary damages to be paid. So this is an interesting question. There are articles in Tuchumen, in Chelek Yudal and in Chelek Tezayin, where Rabbi Yoezer Ariel and Rabbi Tzvi Lifshitz, two Dayanim and Eretz Yisrael, respectively about this topic. Rabbi Yoezer Ariel said that, yeah, we should make takanas nowadays, that if there are really bad cases of defamation, that the Bezdin should impose monetary fines. And Rabbi Tzvi Lifshitz said, no. Because number one, we don't have nidoy, we don't put people in chayrim, so there's no money that we can require in order for people to get out of the chayrim. And number two, if it's a question of sort of this extrajudicial authority of makin roach and shlomin adin, that the Bezdin can make a takana, so he says, you need like the gdolei ador, you know, to make takanas. You can't just have a Bezdin of every single city that they're going to make their own takanas of when they think it's going to be appropriate to have to render payments for defamation. We have the case in Yerushalmi, maybe if a person insulted a Talmid Chacham, okay, fine, but to expand it beyond that, he didn't think there was necessarily authority in that regard. So what we did at the Bezdin of America, and presumably this is the standard we would follow, you know, at the CRC as well, so we drew a distinction between the two following types of defamation cases. What is personal defamation, and the other is professional defamation. If it's a personal defamation case, so there, you're not really dealing with a true monetary claim because of the fact that there is just, you know, more of a question of people are not getting along, they're saying not nasty, not so nice things about each other, and if you can figure out a way to quell, you know, the quarrel peacefully by simply making peace between the people, having them write apology letters, okay, so, you know, you figure out how to resolve the quarrel and the dispute in that particular way. But if you're dealing with professional defamation, a person goes online and they write that a person who's a doctor, who's a very respected doctor, is a complete quack, you know, because they're insisting on, like, vaccinating the patients or something, and therefore, you know, nobody should, you know, go to this doctor anymore, or a particular respected, you know, Rebbe is somebody who is not really knowledgeable and is not, you know, very good at teaching Talmidim, and you should avoid this Rebbe, and as a result, the person loses their job. So there, you are talking about real monetary consequences. Now, it's true, it's monetary consequences that if you look in the Truma Sadesh and Simon Shin Zion, he deals with the case of this sort, where a person was like a Shliach Tzibor, a person was a Chazan, and so many of the defamation cases that are discussed in the postgame have to deal with Chazanim, because somehow there were always cases of Chazanim who are accused of adultery and things of that variety. Don't ask me, you know, how this, you know, happened, but you look in the Tshuvas, and somehow this seems to be a recurring theme. So this was a Shliach Tzibor who was, you know, accused of this type of inappropriate activity. And as a result, of one person speaking in this defamatory way about the Shliach Tzibor, he ended up losing his job. And then it was Niskala, through investigation and through careful fact-checking of the situation, it was discovered that all of these rumors about the Chazan was Shekev Chazan were completely untrue. But in the meantime, the Shul had already hired another Chazan, and this first Chazan was out of a job. So Truma Sadesh says, look, the truth of the matter is that we're talking about Motzi Shema, we're talking about where it was defamation, and it's not collectible according to Torah law. And even the fact that he lost the job, it really is just, you know, a grama biyama. It's just, you know, something that was sort of an indirect cause of the defamation. The one thing led to another until he left his job. But he says, Afa garta bin dinan, these are the last three lines of the Truma Sadesh, the source test Zion. Amnam nira da'afa garta bin dinan, l'ischai shimon kama shibiyarti, even though afa pi din, Shimon is not really liable. Mikomalkum, matzu abezdin. Because, but if the Bezdin wants to make a knas, kedei lasos gedu siyag, in order to stop these types of defamatory actions, feliska pidove sheker, in order to muzzle their lips so that they're not going to cause people to, like, lose their jobs again, mosia shoshem v'harushus biyadam, then the Bezdin has the right in this particular case to impose, you know, this type of a monetary penalty in order to impose a knas. Kepi mashinir alem tzorach l'fiyayin v'chein mashvichu esarosh v'chein roi lasos. And he says v'chein roi lasos that he thinks that this is going to, you know, be appropriate. It may also be buttressed by a comment that the Sholem Eishiv makes, a very fascinating comment that's in Source Yud Zayin. The Sholem Eishiv is kind of substantiating an opinion of the Shach when it comes to the monetary fines that are imposed when people get engaged. And it used to be the engagement party would really be a tanoim. They would sign a tanoim, and that would be part of the party. Now it's just kind of like a lechayim. Everybody's happy, and they, you know, drink liquor or whatever. But it used to be they actually signed the, in some places, maybe I think they still do, they actually sign the tanoim, not just like the tanoim that we sign right before the chuppah that doesn't mean too much because nobody's backing out at that point in time. But they sign the tanoim so that the parties are not going to back out, and then they impose a knas in case one party, let's say, should back out and break off the engagement. So they impose a knas. And the Shach says that you don't require a kinyan, and the Tzo says that you do require a kinyan, because otherwise it wouldn't be a payment that we could really impose. Because what happens when you break off an engagement? So really it's just that one person is embarrassing the other party on some level, and you can't collect money for that. So he says that's why you need a kinyan in order to be able to collect for that type of an action. Otherwise you couldn't collect. But the Shach says, no, you don't need a kinyan for this. Of course this would be something that would be collectible. So how is it collectible? That so says the Sholem Eishiv. I'll explain why it's a collectible. Because he says that this is not just your regular case of biyush bedvarim, but here, if you break up an engagement, you are harming the person's very essence. You are questioning, like, the validity, their viability of getting married altogether. So he says that which we allow a person off the hook, he said, when we say that if it's not on their physical being, that's kosheinu ma'aseh begufo pater above shiduchim, that boshes magia lehanefesh asichli. He says that this is considered like going into the goof, because it's going into the person's very soul. It's like questioning the validity of the person's very essence, saying that, oh, don't marry this person. So he says that's worse than penetrating into their, you know, body and assaulting their body. She said, yote gara mehizik begufo. V'yim kem pshita davshlo asa ma'isa begufo badai chayiv. So if you look like in, I think Rashi and Kiddushin talks about that, when you are, sometimes you have the right to, when a person is like called a rasha, so yorei b'chayev, if a person's like a very integrity has been assaulted, so yorei b'chayev, so you can, you know, go after that person's, you know, living, you can go after that person's livelihood, that there's a notion that you're going, that when you're attacking the essence of a person, so in certain ways, you know, you are you're endangering that person's very ability to live. So under the circumstances where the type of defamation is taking place is a defamation that is preventing the person from living through a livelihood, that you are taking away their livelihood, so maybe it falls more into the category of what the Sholem Meshiv is talking about, that really is an injury on the person himself or herself when the defamation actually takes away their livelihood. Maybe you can compare it to what the Sholem Meshiv says about the broken engagement. That's what I would, you know, suggest as another possible justification. But besides that, if you look at the types of cases where the poskim throughout the generations have actually imposed monetary payments and have said that the takana that the Rush speaks about is appropriate, specifically in the realm of these types of cases where you are taking away the person's livelihood. So there's another tshuva in the Sefer called Avnei Tzedek, where they talk about as well, where another case where a chazan was imperiled in terms of his livelihood because he stayed over in somebody's house, and then the person who was the owner of the house, who also happened to be the shochet, if you want to look at another genre of literature where you find all kinds of aspersions, that's like people who are shochtim. So then the shochet says, oh, the shifka who lives in my house told me this morning that this chazan who's staying over tried to rape her last night. So, you know, and then there was an accusation that the whole thing was made up out of whole cloth, and the Avnei Tzedek said that if it is shown that the whole thing was made up out of a whole cloth, so it would be appropriate to penalize the shochet for spreading this false rumor about the chazan who stayed over in his house in this fashion, again, because it would endanger his livelihood, because then nobody would hire him, or want him to have a job for the shul. So that would be, that's the explanation as to sort of the distinction that we draw between the professional libel, the professional slander cases, where we say if it's professional defamation, so then that's the case you can bring to the Bezdin, because we would consider monetary damages, as opposed to if it is simply person, if it's personal defamation. So ideally, then we should do like what the Maharshal says, that it should be sort of the leaders of the community who should be mashkit de samariva, who should figure out a way in order to make the ketata, to make the quarrel and the controversy die down to other creative ways. But if the community leaders are not able to do it, maybe because they themselves are involved in the katata, so then the Bezdin itself, if you look at the Mishpatech al Yaakov by Yitzvi Yehuda ben Yaakov, a dayan in Tel Aviv, in Source Chabez, he says, Bezdin poel bezeh lefishikul daito lahashki meriva lotoelas inyin lotoelas atzibo. So then it becomes up to the Bezdin's creativity to figure out what is the way that we're going to be able to make this community dispute dissipate and go away, to take the appropriate measures in order to quell the dispute. There was a very interesting sidebar discussion between Rav Meir Barali and Rav Yaakov Epstein, two poskim in Eretz Yisrael, about whether if a person does serve as a public servant, like let's say they're an elected official, particularly like for the community in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's mutter to write articles in the newspaper that are attacking them that might not be like perfectly researched, will end up being some sort of a defamation. Or Meir Barali took made the argument that for the sake of the good of society, it's good, like, you know, like New York Times versus Sullivan, that it's good to be able to attack public figures. And if you're a public figure, then you're basically being meichel on any attack that's made against you, because, like, that's why you go into it. You understand people are going to attack you. And Rav Yaakov Epstein said, what are you talking about? Like, you know, if you're going to allow that, it's like, yitiu pushim es hadavar. Maybe that's the society that we live in, but we're not supposed to be affected by that type of society, especially when the journalists write things all the time that are not based upon truth, or based upon half-truths, that are based upon political agendas and things of that variety. And the fact that this is something that's allowed in general society, lo apir anuchayim, that's not, you know, something that is instructive which is binding upon us. And then he said that even in terms of the argument that you can forgive your own Lashon Hara, or Lashon Hara spoken about you, we know the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, that he said, oh, I realized that when he was denigrating himself, like as the story goes, that he realized you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara against yourself. And Rav Soloveitchik, who he quotes actually in the Rav Epstein quotes, says that explicitly that a person doesn't have bilus on their own reputation, that they should have, Rav Shechter quotes this in the Nefesh HaRav, that a person doesn't have bilus over their own reputation. You can't be meichel on your own reputation. That's your tselem elokim. It's not yours to forgive. Besides the fact that there are other, you know, casualties, as we've mentioned in other contexts, a person can be meichel lashon hara upon themselves, but everybody who's mekapel the lashon hara is going to be committing an even bigger avera. So what does it mean to be meichel lashon hara against yourself, even if you could, even if you arguably could forgive the lashon hara upon yourself? And furthermore, the idea that it is not an actionable offense if it's proven to be true. So there is a Maharshal that says something like that in terms of, like, if you call somebody a mamzer and it turns out that they really are a mamzer, so you're putter. So the Piskei Tshuva says the reason why you would be putter is because you can argue that you were saying the person is a mamzer so that everyone would be careful not to marry that individual, because you're not supposed to marry a mamzer. But if you're just calling the person a mamzer for the sake of, like, defaming the person, or if it's not necessary because people know that they're a mamzer, but you're just kind of like rubbing it in that they happen to be halakhically a mamzer, so then, says the Piskei Tshuva, Pashas is that that would be actionable. That is something that we don't permit. But the one thing the Mishpat Tekel Yaakov does say is that you have sort of, if we were basing ourselves on the secular world, everything would be topsy-turvy, because the things that are mutter, they would say, are awesome, the things that are awesome, they would say, are mutter. So, for example, he says that if it's l'toelis, so then the Chafetz Chaim says, l'toelis, you are allowed to say things. So, for example, there's an establishment that's not kosher. So the Mishpat Tekel Yaakov was dealing with a case where there was an establishment that wasn't kosher, and that it didn't meet certain high standards, and there were people who spoke, you know, a warning others to stay away from that establishment, and the establishment owners brought an action for Lashon Hara because they said, or for Moshe Shemer, for defamation, that they're defaming their good name and people aren't going to buy the product. But he said that these were Rabbanim who really did their research, and based on the good faith research that they did, they really felt that this was a product that people should stay away from. He says, when there's no kavana levayish, like Vexika Mugoshav, indicates that there's a kavana to cause embarrassment to the person. There's no kavana, you're really trying to do something good. So then, if you're really in good faith trying to do something good, and there's a basis for it, so then, you know, that wouldn't be actionable. That is in contrast to a very fascinating case that I found, and I'm going to conclude with this. It's called Cohn versus Eisenberg. It's a New York County case in 1940. You may recall that there was a takana that was issued by the Agudas Rabbanim in 1934 that said that you shouldn't buy meat from any purveyor who claims to be a kosher purveyor of meats if he's also selling non-kosher in the very same facility. That's the famous takana of the Agudas Rabbanim, and it still exists. Adi Yom Hazeh, there was a big, you know, machlokas and discussion amongst the various kashrus agencies about to what degree does it exist. The person owns a non-kosher, you know, plant in one state, and he has a kosher facility in the other state, so does he not have the right to sell kosher meat in the other state? Or does it have to be in the same plant with kosher and non-kosher or together? So it's a question as to how to apply it. But that was like a big thing, because there were, you know, people who were mixing up the kosher meats with the non-kosher meats, and it was a major problem. So in Cohn versus Eisenberg, there was a butcher store, and you look over here, the store owner sold meats and poultry, an established reputation that the foods were kosher, and then some individual comes into their store one day, and the presence and hearing of everyone there, imagine what he had the audacity and the temerity to do. He declared the store was not kosher, And then the store owner sued this person for defamation. So the defendant, who was trying to warn people against buying the meat in the store, pointed out that they had violated the takana of the 1934 takana of the Agudas of Rabbanim. The defendant called two rabbis whose testimony was to the effect that under the Orthodox Hebrew religious requirements then enforced in New York City, the poultry was not kosher if it had not been slaughtered in an establishment having rabbinical supervision under the auspices of the Kashrus Association of Greater New York Incorporated, meaning where there would only be kosher meat on the facilities. And the rabbis testified that in November 1934, an assembly of the majority of the Orthodox rabbis in New York City adopted an Isser, religious prohibitory decree which prescribed said requirements, that said Isser thereupon became a part of the Jewish law, that this now became Usser to sell meat from a facility that had both kosher meat and non-kosher meat in the facility. Furthermore, the mashgiach of this store was none other than a certain Rabbi Chalap. I'm guessing it's the father of Rabbi Zvulun Chalap from YU, I'm guessing, but it doesn't give his first name, so I can't say 100% for sure. So Rabbi Chalap, who was the one who gave the hashkacha to the store, he testified on behalf of the defendant. So you figure the defendant's in pretty good shape now, because the person who's giving the supervision said, had I known this, I wouldn't have given supervision. Testifies to the fact that he did not know until after the day when the plaintiff claimed the alleged acts complained have occurred, that they were selling poultry without the seal of the Kashrus Association. Had he known, he would have removed his sign, because the poultry was therefore not kosher. So what did the court say? The court said, come on! Politics! Politics! The food's really kosher. What? Before Agudas of Rabbanim came along in 1934, did anyone say that in order for food to be kosher, it couldn't be from a facility that also sold non-kosher meat? Come on, you salt it, you trave the meat, you know, you do the normal things in order to make it kosher. You remove the blood, you remove the fat. Don't give me this political stuff about Agudas of Rabbanim. The court is unwilling to hold that poultry which would otherwise meet every requirement to make a kosher, requirements that have been established for centuries, the judge was a posek here, and which would be kosher if slaughtered and prepared in any place in the world, except the city of New York, with this Agudas of Rabbanim, that I am not goris, would become non-kosher solely because it was slaughtered and prepared in an establishment not maintained under the auspices of an incorporated organization, by no means universally accepted as an arbiter by those of the Jewish faith, nothing doing. Court holds the word spoke by action will per se because they tended to injure plaintiffs in their business and actually granted the cause for defamation. So as you can see, if you look at sort of the secular world for precedent, everything is going to be completely topsy-turvy, which is why it's so important to look at the halakhic sources to figure out, you know, how to deal with these things, you know, appropriately. Somebody brought one of these actions in front of the Beis Din, and the Beis Din said it doesn't fall into the bailiwick of cases where we are going to be able to award you, even if everything that you're saying is accurate, we're not going to be able to award monetary damages. So the person said, oh great, so give me permission to go to the secular courts. So the Beis Din said, no, you don't get it. This isn't like a case where the halacha says you'd be allowed to collect, but because of the limitations of shlichus sayu, we can't allow you to collect nowadays. It's not like a case where somebody spit on your body or something like that. There really would not be. This is a personal defamation suit for which you would not be allowed to receive any kind of monetary damages. So therefore, this does not fall into the category of cases where we would authorize somebody, because there was something that's like the smock had said in one place that if a Beis Din can't handle the case of Boshes, so the Beis Din has the prerogative of saying, well, if shlichus sayo prevents us from hearing the case because we can't award Boshes nowadays since it doesn't have chisaron kids, so we can authorize somebody to go to the secular courts. That's only if it's classic old-time Boshes that you could have collected in the time of the Gemara, but if it's new time of Boshes Dvarim, so then it depends on whether the Beis Din makes a takana to collect or not. If the Beis Din doesn't make a takana that you can collect this, and the Beis Din is not going to authorize you to go to the secular courts either to collect, because then you have no right to go to the secular courts to collect. And if you don't have a cause of action, you don't have a cause of action. Nonetheless, it's still an issur gomer, obviously, to speak lashon hara, to engage in defamation in any form. And this is just kind of, you know, an important exercise in terms of exploring the degree to which, you know, these types of claims are actionable in Beis Din cases,
Bismarck. Would a civil court enforce a psak of a Beis Din if it's, let's say, lashon hara, where it's a truthful statement, and we said that in civil court, if you make a truthful statement, it's not defamation, right? But it may be lashon hara, And for Bezdin's purposes.
Right, so if Bezdin decided, let's say that it was a professional, again, professional defamation, probably it would have to, it would be a case where it was not true either, you know, because otherwise there might be a toelus to people, you know, not, you know, going to, you know, a doctor who is a competent doctor. But it might be a truthful statement that has nothing to do with the person's professional capabilities. So you could have a case of that sort, but as long as the parties had submitted to the jurisdiction of the Bezdin, as a general rule, the secular courts will respect and enforce said the Bezdin decision, you know, once the parties have submitted to its jurisdiction. Okay. Stop here.
What about injunctions? Bezdin issue injunctions?
Yes, Bezdin can issue injunctions, you know, for sometimes for specific performance or restraining orders or, you know, things of that variety. Yeah.